When Al Vernacchio walks into his sexuality and society classroom, he doesn't start with anatomy drawings or scare tactics. Instead, he establishes ground rules to create a respectful community where students can explore sexuality as a philosophy rather than just an act. This approach has made For Goodness Sex a groundbreaking work that's reshaping how we talk about sexuality with young people. Since its initial publication in 2014 and its updated 2023 edition, the book has garnered praise from sexuality educators, medical professionals, and parents alike. Dr. Christiane Northrup calls it a breath of much-needed fresh air, while Publishers Weekly celebrates Vernacchio's no-blame, no-shame approach. The book's popularity reflects a growing recognition that our traditional approaches to sexuality education, focused on fear, danger, and abstinence, have failed to prepare young people for healthy sexual relationships in an increasingly complex world. The baseball metaphor for sexual progression has dominated American culture for generations. First base, second base, scoring. These terms are so embedded in our collective consciousness that most teenagers immediately understand their sexual connotations. But as Vernacchio brilliantly illustrates, this framework is fundamentally problematic. The baseball model portrays sex as a competition between opposing teams rather than a collaborative experience. It reinforces sexist stereotypes, with boys cast as aggressors trying to round the bases, while girls serve as gatekeepers whose job is defense. It establishes a rigid progression that must be followed in order, you can't skip bases or go backward, and makes sex goal-oriented rather than pleasure-focused. Perhaps most troublingly, it's inherently heterosexist, leaving no room for diverse sexual orientations or asexuality. When we use baseball as our model for sexual activity, Vernacchio explains, we're setting ourselves up for experiences that are competitive rather than collaborative, goal-directed rather than pleasure-directed, and rule-bound rather than creative. As an alternative, Vernacchio proposes the pizza model for sexual activity. Unlike baseball with its rigid rules and external scheduling, pizza is something you choose when you're in the mood. It involves communication about desires and preferences, what toppings would you like, and requires mutual consent. The focus is on shared satisfaction rather than competition, and it allows for different preferences and experiences each time. This pizza model encourages young people to make deliberate decisions about their sexuality based on internal desires rather than external expectations. It transforms the conversation from how far did you get to what did you enjoy together? This shift in metaphor may seem simple, but its implications for how young people conceptualize sexual experiences are profound and far-reaching. Most people fear discussing values more than sexual activity itself. Values are our deepest set rules guiding decisions. They explain not just what we do, but why. Every choice reflects values. Nothing is value neutral. Understanding the difference between facts, opinions, and values is crucial for meaningful discussion about sexuality. Our basic orientation towards sexuality typically leans either positive or negative. Some view sexuality as dangerous or dirty, while others see it as a good gift from a good God that enables authentic connection. A positive orientation doesn't mean anything goes. In fact, because Vernacchio values sexuality as a force for good, his behavioral guidelines are quite stringent. Different core values produce different guidelines about sexual activity. Some prioritize love over physical pleasure, place a partner's desires above their own, value safety over pleasure, or use religious or parental approval as benchmarks. Parents should help children develop their own defendable values through guidance, exploration, and information, rather than simply moralizing. When discussing sexuality, many believe there's a right way to talk, but there are actually multiple languages of sexuality that work in different contexts. Slang is specific to particular groups, but typically fails when parents attempt to use it with teens. Secret language intentionally obscures meaning, whether used by teens hiding conversations from adults or by adults uncomfortable with direct terminology. Even correct terminology can function as secret language if the audience isn't familiar with it. Childlike language for genitals creates problems later. Children who learn special words for genitals or aren't taught proper terms may develop shame or confusion. There's no reason children who know words like elbow shouldn't also learn penis or vulva. Romance language offers important alternatives to crude terminology, while archaic terms reflect outdated, often sexist perspectives. Medical/biological language is standard for formal discussions, but isn't appropriate in every situation. Parents should practice saying these words aloud before conversations with children to avoid conveying embarrassment. The key is being fluent in all these languages to communicate effectively in different contexts. No language is universally right or wrong. Appropriateness depends on context. Starting conversations about sexuality doesn't need to be complicated. Sexuality educator Deborah Rothman wisely suggests having 100 one-minute talks rather than one 100-minute talk. The most effective conversations arise naturally from everyday moments. News stories, songs, advertisements, or social media can provide perfect openings. Vernacchio begins his gender unit with a provocative classroom activity. He asks students to imagine their genitals have disappeared, and they must identify them from a room full of lost genitals. This exercise reveals stark differences between how males and females relate to their bodies. Boys confidently claimed they could identify their penises, while most girls admit they've never even seen their vulvas. This sets up a discussion about how society treats male and female genitalia differently, with penises being more public, while vulvas are often stigmatized. Our bodies are fundamentally similar despite sex differences. Vernacchio rejects the term opposite sex in favor of other sex, which acknowledges our similarities and accommodates intersex identities. While acknowledging biological differences, males tend to be larger with stronger upper bodies, while females have stronger lower bodies and greater endurance, he cautions against biological determinism. He discusses reproductive strategies and brain differences, but emphasizes these don't dictate personality or behavior. While sex is biological, gender is primarily shaped by cultural and sociological forces. Vernacchio defines gender as constructed rules or norms that a society assigns to a person based on their assigned sex at birth. Gender identity, one's internal sense of gender, typically solidifies by age 3 or 4 through a complex interplay of biology, social interactions, and self-creation. Most people are cisgender, with gender identity matching their birth assigned sex. Transgender people have a gender identity that doesn't align with their birth assigned sex. Gender expression, how we show our gender through clothing, hairstyle, hobbies, behaviors, and language, allows us to present ourselves authentically, though some hide their true selves due to fear of rejection or harm. Vernacchio emphasizes there's nothing wrong with traditional gender expressions if they feel authentic. Gender scripts are culturally constructed behavior codes that often maintain privilege and power rather than promoting individuality. Societies with strict gender scripts experience more sexual assault, child abuse, and discrimination. Girls typically have more flexibility in gender expression than heterosexual boys, who fear being perceived as gay. Boys follow complex rules for acceptable physical intimacy with other boys, while girls face judgment for violating good girl expectations. Today's young people are more comfortable with fluid identity labels, using terms like non-binary, genderqueer, demi-boy, and many others beyond the traditional binary. When a young person shares their gender identity, Vernacchio advises thanking them for sharing, asking for clarification if needed, and avoiding interrogation. He emphasizes that exploring different labels is normal developmental work toward authenticity. Vernacchio begins his sexual orientation unit with a forced choice activity, where students physically move to corners representing different beliefs about what causes sexual orientation. After students share their reasoning, he points out that almost everyone automatically interpreted the question as what causes homosexuality, rather than considering sexual orientation more broadly. This reveals the common assumption that only non-heterosexual orientations need explanation. Sexual orientation is entirely different from gender. Gender is about who we are, while sexual orientation is about who we're attracted to. Vernacchio provides clear examples. Himself, a man with masculine expression attracted to men, a female friend, woman with feminine expression attracted to both men and women, and a former student with queer gender identity but masculine pronouns who was attracted to people across the gender spectrum. Coming out is the process of acknowledging one's sexual orientation to oneself and then to others. Vernacchio advocates an integrated approach where coming out as heterosexual deserves attention alongside other orientations, helping everyone better understand the experience. The two-step process involves first recognizing and integrating one's attractions internally, then sharing that self-knowledge with others. Vernacchio shares his childhood experience of feeling different at age 5 or 6, particularly in his fascination with Donny Osmond. Watching Osmond gave him butterflies and happiness, though he had no sexual understanding at that age. He noticed his reaction differed from other boys and quickly learned that discussing these feelings made adults uncomfortable and confused his peers. Coming out isn't a one-time event, but a lifelong process that happens with each new encounter. Every casual conversation where we mention a spouse or romantic interest is actually a coming out experience. While coming out to strangers can be straightforward, revealing ourselves to those closest to us often proves more challenging. Sexual orientation prejudice manifests in violence against non-heterosexuals through verbal, physical, emotional, or social attacks. These prejudices cause thousands of deaths yearly and fuel school bullying. They appear in subtle ways too, like withholding affection from same-gender friends to avoid giving the wrong impression, or dismissing bisexuality as just a phase. To eliminate prejudice, Vernacchio advises honest conversations, using inclusive language, avoiding harmful jokes, and speaking up against discrimination. Personal connections with LGBTQ+ individuals are particularly effective at reducing prejudice. Body image is about how we think we look rather than our actual appearance. Vernacchio describes poor body image as an epidemic, particularly among young people, with over half of teenage girls and nearly a third of teenage boys using unhealthy weight control behaviors. He blames media and consumer culture for profiting from body insecurities and teaches students that perfect images they see are heavily manipulated. Building better body image means changing our thinking rather than our bodies. Vernacchio teaches three key ideas. First, we're born with one of three basic body types that can't fundamentally change. Second, being fit and healthy differs from meeting beauty standards. Third, when students list people who matter most to them, they rarely choose anyone based solely on appearance. Real relationships aren't built on physical features alone. Vernacchio explains the direct connection between body image and sexual satisfaction, quoting psychiatrist Anthony Storr, "A proper pride in oneself as a human being is rooted in the body through which love is given and taken. Good body image correlates with increased sexual pleasure because satisfying sexual experiences require being fully present and appreciating one's body. Conversely, poor body image can lead to diminished enjoyment, avoidance of relationships altogether, or engaging in unwanted sexual activities from a sense of low self-worth." Vernacchio disdains the slang term junk for genitals, arguing we'd be healthier if we understood our bodies honestly. He emphasizes to students the importance of knowing their own genitals before engaging sexually with others. For boys, penises are often celebrated with aggressive nicknames, sometimes leading to unhealthy penis arrogance. He debunks size myths, noting most erect penises measure 5 to 7 inches. For girls, society remains quiet about vulvas, which come in diverse shapes and sizes. Vernacchio encourages female students to examine their vulvas with mirrors to develop body confidence. When teens ask how they'll know they're ready for sex, Vernacchio suggests readiness involves thinking beyond oneself, being able to discuss sex openly with partners, caring about their pleasure equally, and considering potential consequences for both parties. Being nervous is natural, but feeling afraid may indicate something's missing. He strongly warns against using substances before sexual activity as it prevents clear consent, which must always be active and positive. When teens ask how they'll know they're ready for sex, Vernacchio suggests readiness involves thinking beyond oneself, being able to discuss sex openly with partners, caring about their pleasure equally, and considering potential consequences for both parties. Being nervous is natural, but feeling afraid may indicate something's missing. He strongly warns against using substances before sexual activity, as it prevents clear consent, which must always be active and positive. Technology has fundamentally changed how teens communicate about relationships and sex. Unlike previous generations, today's teens conduct much of their social and romantic lives through digital channels. They begin relationships via text, share intimate thoughts electronically, and even break up through messages. This constant connectivity creates a Pavlovian response to notifications that disrupts face-to-face interactions. Today's teens conduct entire relationships through digital channels, from initial flirtation to serious discussions about values and sexual readiness. They multitask conversations across platforms, simultaneously texting sweethearts while messaging friends and completing homework. My students consistently prefer texting for serious topics and voice calls for casual matters, the opposite of what seems healthy to me. Digital communication also enables people to present curated versions of themselves, creating unrealistic expectations when meeting in person. Sexting, sending explicit text messages, photos, or videos via text, has become commonplace among teens. A 2018 JAMA study found at least 1 in 4 teens receive sexually explicit texts, 1 in 7 sends them, and concerning numbers forward sexts without consent. The speed of digital sharing dramatically increases risks. What once might have been a physical photo passed around school can now reach hundreds of devices in seconds. Parents must discuss privacy with their children in an era where personal information is routinely shared online. Using the circles of intimacy exercise, concentric circles representing different levels of privacy, helps teams understand they control what others know about them, but only by defining and enforcing their own privacy policies. Once information moves beyond the innermost circle, control is lost. Discussing pornography is an essential part of healthy sexuality education. Today's youth can access pornography with unprecedented ease. Porn sites receive more visitors monthly than Netflix, Amazon, and Twitter combined. For many teens, porn offers their first glimpse of sexual activity, but delivers profoundly unhealthy messages: that sex is the entirety of life, that women exist as objects for male pleasure, and that violence during sex is normal. When discussing pornography with young people, it's crucial to distinguish between pornography and sexually explicit material. Pornography is designed specifically to sexually stimulate or excite, made for prurient interests. In contrast, sexually explicit material is designed to educate or inform, not to excite. Young people's natural curiosity about bodies and sex is perfectly normal, and they deserve appropriate resources rather than turning to pornography for information. The solution to sexual violence is deceptively simple: understanding and practicing consent. Every instance of sexual violence begins as a violation of someone's consent. Vernacchio students understand that consent is essential before sexual activity, but they struggle with how to establish it. Do I actually have to ask someone whether I can kiss them, they wonder. They dread the awkwardness of verbal consent negotiations. He reminds them that life is awkward, and that sex itself is inherently awkward. People get cramps, make noises, fall off beds. It's not like movies or porn. Consent applies whenever we interact with another person's body, property, or reputation. We practice consent constantly, but often unconsciously, like apologizing when accidentally bumping someone, asking before borrowing items, or seeking permission before sharing information about others. If we became more deliberate about establishing consent in everyday situations, negotiating sexual consent would feel more natural. For consent to be valid, honesty is essential. Both parties must be truthful about what they want and their responses. In Vernacchio's classroom, many students admit to saying yes when they meant no to avoid hurting feelings or because it seemed easier. This highlights how power dynamics can disrupt consent. It's only valid when we genuinely have the choice to say yes or no. Consent fails when there's dishonesty, misunderstanding, impaired thinking from alcohol or drugs, or lack of knowledge. While nonverbal consent is possible, verbal consent is always preferable, especially for significant matters. Silence, shrugs, or no never convey consent, and prior consent doesn't transfer to new situations. Proper consent must be affirmative, enthusiastic, honest, revocable, and situation-specific. Sexual violence doesn't appear from nowhere. Communities where harassment or assault becomes an issue typically have underlying beliefs and practices that enable such events. Dr. Jackson Katz visualizes this using a pyramid model. At the top are the most extreme forms of sexual violence. Below are lesser forms that, if unaddressed, create conditions for worse violence. But the true roots lie at the pyramid's bottom, unexamined ideas, practices, and cultural assumptions that seem invisible because they're so normalized. Communities operating on boys will be boys attitudes, individuals who tell rape jokes, or schools normalizing gender inequity rather than equity all create atmospheres where sexual violence can flourish. By focusing attention on these foundational issues, we become proactive in preventing violence rather than merely reactive after horrible events occur. Vernacchio begins teaching relationships by examining non-romantic connections before romantic ones, explaining how all relationships influence each other. He introduces Robert Sternberg's theory of love having three components: intimacy, heart to heart, passion, body to body, and commitment, mind to mind, as a framework for analyzing different relationship types. The author guides students through a relationship spectrum: acquaintances, minimal connection, non-romantic friends, high intimacy, low passion, hooking up, high passion, low intimacy slash commitment, having a thing, high passion with rising intimacy and short-term commitment, and sweetheart relationships, high in all three components. Students push back against rigid categories, recognizing relationships exist on fluid continuums. Vernacchio explores how teens need to identify their relationship deal breakers and deal makers, what they will and won't accept in relationships. He acknowledges the cultural pressure to be paired off and helps students recognize that some values, like religious compatibility, may be non-negotiable even for teenagers. The author emphasizes several components of healthy relationships: equitable power dynamics, using the half your age plus seven guideline, maintaining individuality, avoiding becoming Rich and Amy who share a lung, communicating both positive and negative feelings honestly, and establishing reliable commitment patterns. He warns against excessive texting as a substitute for face-to-face interaction and encourages teens to embrace the inherent awkwardness of real relationships rather than hiding behind screens. The relationship ideal he presents is best friend qualities plus sexual desire, where partners can be authentic rather than perfect. Vernacchio shares a powerful story about a heartbroken student whose girlfriend had broken up with him. While his friends urged him to be strong, Vernacchio gave him permission to grieve, telling him, "It's a really sad thing that's happened." The student broke down crying, eventually expressing surprise that no one had told him it was okay to feel sad. Vernacchio emphasizes that teen relationships are very real to young people, even if adults might dismiss them. He advises parents to acknowledge the grief process of breakups and help teens understand that their feelings are legitimate. He presents Albert Angelo's model of the 8 stages of grief after a breakup: denial, anger and confusion, bargaining, acknowledgement and grieving, evaluation, I'm not the same person, there's no going back, and peace. The transformation in Vernacchio's students throughout his sexuality and society class is remarkable. They begin nervous and confused, but leave confident and secure in their values. This change doesn't require special expertise, just open conversation. Near the end of the course, his students write advice for younger students. Their insights are deeply moving. They emphasize that no one is truly normal, that others' feelings matter in relationships, and that you should only pursue what you actively want. They advise loving yourself first, keeping an open mind while knowing your opinions, and only having sex when your entire being says yes. students warn that phrases like no pressure often mean the opposite, affirm that having sex doesn't make you a bad person, and remind that it's okay to be single despite high school relationship pressures. They acknowledge that first sexual experiences rarely match expectations and should be viewed as learning opportunities. They emphasize communication and listening as essential skills and reject the notion that sexual activity determines social worth. Their final wisdom? It's okay to be confused, to be complicated, to be scared, to make mistakes. It will all be okay, and it is most definitely okay to be you. Parents can facilitate these same positive changes without specialized knowledge, simply by creating judgment-free spaces for conversation, allowing questions, supporting decision-making, including mistakes, and helping young people recognize external expectations versus their authentic selves. It's not about being a sex expert, it's about being open to dialogue. In the decades since the book's original publication, much has changed. The Trump administration, #MeToo, Black Lives Matter, increased LGBTQ+ visibility, COVID-19, Capitol insurrection, internet pornography, Roe v. Wade's reversal, and our widening cultural divide. Through it all, Vernacchio maintains that sexuality education is social justice work that should make people more free, loving, and accepting. It must be intersectional, examining how factors like age, ability, gender, race, and religion interact. Despite societal changes, teenagers' developmental needs remain consistent. Good sexuality education must be age-appropriate, medically accurate, value-explicit, honest, joyful, intersectional, and accessible. It teaches authenticity and helps young people form healthy relationships that better our world.